on Food Heroes Radio, AM 950, K-High.
Good Saturday morning, Foothills is now 10:05, and we will continue with KAHI's live Saturday morning lineup here on the Voice of the Foothills, AM 950, and on the web at KAHI.com. Coming up next, it is Medically Speaking Radio. We're looking at 71 degrees outside the KAHI studios for our afternoon highs. We're looking at 86 for Auburn, 85 for Grass Valley, and 88 for Placerville. Still coming up this morning on your live Saturday morning lineup at 11 o'clock. We have the Playmakers radio show, and after that at 12 noon, we have the brand new wine show, so you can tune in for that. Should be good times. As always, our phone lines are open, and your calls are more than welcome this Saturday morning. If you'd like to get on the air with us, you can reach us at 885-3565 or 1-800-950-KHI.
Views expressed by the guests and telephone participants do not necessarily express the views of the management, staff, or sponsors of AM 950 KHI.
Now it's time for Medically Speaking Radio with your hosts, Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney, coming at you live from the Medical History Museum here in Auburn. Take it away.
Thank you, Trevor. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, it's slightly different intro music for us today. A little Purple Haze for you. We're doing this to commemorate the 40th anniversary of Woodstock. You know, a lot of us baby boomers claim to have been there. We all wish we were there. Just like a lot of listeners are going to claim that they heard us on our first show back in June.
Were we going to say something about the people who claim they were conceived at Woodstock?
I say you make that claim, but I know your parents, and I'm trying to picture them. I'm going, no, not even possible. Not even possible.
Welcome to Medically Speaking Radio. This is a very interesting show. This is our first remote broadcast, and we are at the Gold Country Medical History Museum right on 219 Maple Street here in Old Town Auburn. It really does add ambiance to the show, and it's inspiring to see the pictures on the walls and the old advertisements.
Well, my favorite so far is the nurse mannequin. When you first walk in the door, there's a nurse mannequin sitting on the bed. And without fail, every one of these doctors that's walked in, some of the guests that are going to be on our show, have greeted her. And in fact, our station manager, Mike Ramey, came up and handed her a business card and shook her hand. And
he was sitting there talking to her.
She's kind of hot. Oh. Shall we get to the news?
You guys, she's a nun.
No, really?
She's one of the Sisters of Mercy.
Oh, well, never mind.
Okay, so we'll be respectful. Yeah, this is just an interesting show in many ways, not only because of the atmosphere, but, you know, last night, unexpectedly, I had a family member who had to have emergency surgery.
Yeah, I'm wondering why you're wearing your scrubs today.
And it's not the same scrubs I was wearing in the operating room. I was able to assist, thankfully. And it was actually a really good experience. I hadn't been in the operating room for, I think, 3 years. Back then it was an orthopedic surgery, too. So this morning I threw on the scrubs out of, remembering the scrubs and not able to decide what else to wear, and because I'm a showman.
There you go. Well, this is radio, so you're just going to have to imagine it out there, folks in radio land.
I'm wearing my scrubs for radio. We have things coming up that are somewhat medically health related. We've got the Lake of the Pines. I'm not sure what the name is. It's a triathlon or a run, swim, bike competition. And wouldn't it be great if they invited us to come out to do a live remote broadcast from their event?
I will run and I will a bike, but I don't know how to swim.
Well, I'm talking to my brothers about maybe doing a relay where I would do the bicycle and they would do the other two events.
Okay,
so
that's great.
That might be interesting if we're doing a live remote and I'm competing at the same time. We'll have to get some kind of a headset for that, wouldn't we?
Bluetooth technology.
There you go. So on this show, since we are talking about medical history in the Auburn area, Placer County, it is the Gold Country Medical History Museum, we may be having a lot of people who want to call in either to talk about their memories or experiences in medicine in Auburn going way back to the 60s and before. And so we need to give out the phone numbers for that. Also, since we're going to have, we should name our guests now so people know who's going to be on. We have with us in the Medical History Museum right now Dr. Gordon Seck, Dr. Becker, Dr. Bob Schnetzler, Dr. Bob Weiss. And in addition to that, we also have Kent Perryman, the curator, to speak about the history of this museum in particular.
Yeah, and you have me. I'm a fossil. I was born here in Auburn at the old Highland Hospital.
At Highland. You were born at Highland. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm an early patient.
So because of that, I want to get the phone numbers out early. The local number is 885-3565. That's 885-3565. And for our listeners over the internet, with the streaming K-High, we also have 1-800-950-5244. And they make that really easy to remember because it's 950 K-High.
Yeah. And is there a special line for our Forest Hill listeners?
Oh, man. Do I have to use the disclaimer already?
Oh, no. Can we skip the disclaimer? Or do you want to do it? I know it's a...
Can I do it?
It's a much-anticipated portion of our show. You may do the disclaimer.
Kent, do you want to do the disclaimer?
No. Go ahead.
Kent declines doing the disclaimer. Okay, here.
All right, go.
I'll do it quickly. The content of this website and the Medically Speaking radio show are meant for entertainment and general information purposes. No doctor-patient relationship is attempted or implied through the show or the website. Any medical advice, home remedies, or all other medical information on the website or the web show should not be treated as a substitute for the medical advice of your own doctor. Do not attempt any treatment mentioned on the website or the show without consulting your doctor. Always consult your doctor if you are any way concerned about your health. If you need a doctor and live in near Placer County, call Jen at 530-886-8630. Again, that's 530-886-8630. If you have a medical emergency, you call 911. Medically Speaking Radio, Dr. Mark Vaughn, Auburn Medical Group, K-High Radio, and or our sponsors are not responsible for any diagnosis or treatment made by anyone based on any of the content of this website or the Medically Speaking Radio show. In addition, the views and opinions expressed on the show or on linked websites are not necessarily those of Dr. Mark Vaughn, K-High Radio, the Auburn Medical Group, Incorporated, or any of the show sponsors.
Actual mileage may vary. Small parts may present a choking hazard. Any erection lasting over 4 hours may be referred to Dr. Mark Vaughn.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Is it time to go over listener mail?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. This came in by email. Also, in addition to email, if you have something you want to talk to us about, you can go to our Facebook fan site and write on the wall the message, and we will respond to it. And that way all of our fans can participate, which I think the count is now up to 87.
Something like that. We have fans all over the world.
All you Facebook users, go to Facebook. Find us there as Medically Speaking Radio and become a fan of the show. And certainly you don't have to just write on it during the show. You can do it even during the week. Oh, we're getting some power. Oh, that's the microphone. Great.
It's,
we have another microphone.
It's a dropped microphone. It's one of the general hazards of remote broadcast.
Yeah.
We're out here in the field.
We're out in the rough.
This is...
truly on location.
Jungle medicine.
I was going to say, I feel like one of those reporters in Vietnam. Or what?
Okay.
I wasn't conceived in Vietnam either.
No. Where were we?
Listener, correspondent.
Oh, yeah. So this is our correspondent
okay.
from.
Okay. Now, because this came over the email and not on Facebook, there's, and we don't know how much anonymity this person wants to keep. I'm not going to read the name, but I will say that they're in Pennsylvania, and if you're listening to us right now, the person who wrote to us this week, from West Chester, Pennsylvania. You're welcome to call in and speak with us at 1-800-950-5244. Again, that's 1-800-950-5244. Because we'd like to know how in the world did you come across a radio show in Auburn, California, living in Pennsylvania. But here's the email. What do you do when you know there is something seriously wrong with you, but none of the 50 doctors you have seen can diagnose your problem? In the meantime, you just schedule appointment after appointment, all the while you are sitting at home and can't function to even take a walk outside because your feet will start to burn and your legs will act up. You can't work or go to school, but the doctors say that otherwise you are healthy. That's in quotes, healthy. What is the point of being healthy if you can't function, and what is the point of seeing a doctor if they can't diagnose you? Are doctors simply only there for routine appointments but cannot accurately diagnose something outside the regular, that's in quotes, things they see day to day? Please help me understand. And then it's signed. I've got
Got a bunch of doctors in there.
Four doctors around us, in addition to myself. And if any of you want to comment on this, you're certainly welcome. We'll hand the microphone to you and let you. But I will say that this is a tough one, and that we do have patients that come to us. I'm sure, I want to look for nods of heads. Has everybody had something, maybe not the exact symptoms are described here, but something that seemed like this that came in your office? Okay, we got one nod. We'll take that. There are a lot of things out there that people have that are very painful to them, that are disabling to them, that sometimes are quite hard to diagnose and treat. I have to say that, and this is not 100%, but I do have to say a lot of times when that happens, there are psychological causes to it and issues that need to be addressed, and oftentimes we will want involvement of counseling or psychiatry or medication to help with that. And I hate to say that first, because some people take that as insulting when they're in that situation, and it adds more pain to it. And I don't know, maybe I'm unique in the world of medicine, but I come to it with this attitude of, even though it seems like that when I'm working with a patient, I would hate to make that assumption and miss something organic that's really going on that we could make a difference for. So oftentimes I will ask for referrals. It sounds like in a case like this, I'd probably be asking for neurology to look into the situation. And I can't give a definite answer to this person. I will say that I feel for what's going on there, and that when we have patients like this, we try to help them. We try very hard not to just give them narcotic pain medicine, which may or may not actually treat what the pain is that they're having. We discussed this on our fibromyalgia show, how some people will be put on, or in the past would be put on narcotics, and now we actually have medicines that help their pain, that the anti-seizure medications that work and the antidepressants that work to help the pain, even though it's not necessarily depression. The medicines work because of the way they work on the nervous system. So our listener in Pennsylvania, I certainly have not given you much that's specific, but I want to affirm that you are in a tough situation when you're in feeling like that and you have symptoms that can't be diagnosed and you don't seem to be getting good treatment. I would say, if you haven't, that you should at least consider and explore either the psychiatry or the counseling side of it. Not that I'm saying that's what's going on, but it certainly could be, and so please don't rule that out without talking about it or exploring it. The doctors you've worked with may have already suggested that, or you may have actually done that without getting help, and I'm sorry if that's the case. Larry, I'm looking to you, but I don't know that the accountant would necessarily...
No. You know, he's used up his... 50-50. He's polling the audience, and maybe it's time for the phone-a-friend option.
Yeah, and we can even have listeners call in with comments about this situation, too. Again, I want to get out those numbers because this show is probably going to be listener-driven, 885-3565. And we also want to, before we move on in the show, take a break, and then when we get back, we're going to finish up a little bit of housekeeping business, and we'll get right into the show with the Medical History Museum and our guest doctors. So after this break, we'll be right back.
Few things in life are harder than thinking about serious illness or the death of someone you love. Research confirms that Americans want the basic services that hospice provides. Care at home or in a home-like setting. Treatment that preserves a sense of dignity and respect. Emotional and spiritual support for patients and for their families. And effective pain management. Hospice helps patients and their families deal with end-of-life challenges in a life-affirming, compassionate way that brings dignity, hope, and love to every day of life. This message of love and caring is the focus of hospice care. This message is brought to you by Sutter Auburn Faith Hospice. We can be reached at 886-6650 or click on the link for Sutter Auburn Faith Hospice on the Medically Speaking Radio website.
Larry, have you ever been to Auburn Drug Company?
Yeah, that's the one with the marble soda fountain at 815 Lincoln Way.
Yeah, right there in front they have the marble fountain, and in back is an independently owned pharmacy right here in Auburn.
And that thing has been around for a long time.
Since the 1800s. They are so great because they actually fill your prescriptions when you ask them to, unlike the chain drug stores that make you wait.
You know, and waiting there wouldn't be a big crime because, heck, you could always go to the soda fountain. That's Auburn Drug Company at 815 Lincoln Way in downtown Auburn. Give them a call at 885-6524.
Now, back to Medically Speaking with Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney.
Museum with our guests. I wanted to go over one more quick little thing before we jump into the Gold Country Medical History Museum, and that's support our sponsors page. We have a sponsors page on our website, which is medicallyspeakingradio.com, and you can look there and see our sponsors. We have the Auburn Medical Group. We have Sutter Auburn Faith Hospital and Sutter Auburn Hospice. We'll actually be speaking a little bit about what hospice is in this show, because that's a big part of what this building we're in was back in the 1850s. Also, again, I wanted to mention that we do have the Facebook fan page. I encourage you to become a fan of the show. That brings us to time with the Medical History Museum. So we have curator Kent Perryman here. And, Kent, I'd like to take the mic right out of the stand here and have you hold it in your hand right up to your mouth so that you can tell us a little bit about this building that we're in.
Thank you very much. I'm Kent Perryman. I'm a retired associate professor from UCLA School of Medicine and a neuroscience researcher with the Veterans Administration. And this building was built in 1852. It was a private residence up until 1855. And what happened in 1855 is the state mandated that each county have its own health facility. So this was a hospital for the indigent, and it stayed that way up until around the 1880s, in which time it was reverted back to the public. A photographer and a dentist had this building. Up until about 1890, we had a fire here, and the building was pretty much damaged, and it was rebuilt. The dentist, Dr. Halbier, moved in and moved back in again. And then what happened in about 1957, we don't have a lot of history between the 1880s and the 57, the county bought it back, and they used it for the SPCA was here, and there were other county offices here. And then the county owned it up until about, I'd say 4 or 5 years ago, and they put it up for auction. There was going to be demolition. The building was in pretty sad shape. And the Old Town Auburn Preservation Society that was run by Ross and Lynn Carpenter and their board stepped in and acquired that, and there was basically a total restoration right down to the framework and to the studs. New flooring, new wainscoting, new drywall, new electrical, everything was restored back to where it was. I'd like to comment a little bit about what medicine was like in the 1850s. At that time, that was the era of what they call heroic medicine. This is before germ theory, scientific medicine was even involved. That came later in the 1860s and the 1870s. At that time, all they could do, these hospitals were for the indigent. Prior to that, The only hospital we had in California was out in Monterey. That was in 1844 when it was under Mexican rule, and that was for malaria. But up until this was one of the early hospitals besides a few in San Francisco that were canvas hospitals, and the one at Sutter's Fort, which was in 1850, and that was in August that they started up. It was a 30-bed hospital. So this was one of the very early hospitals.
Wow.
All they could do back then was make patients comfortable. It was basically hospice, palliative care. There was rooms upstairs and downstairs with beds. At this time, there was no female nursing. It was mostly male nursing. The Sisters of Mercy didn't come in from Ireland until 1856, and they contracted out initially with the hospitals in Sacramento and San Francisco for nursing care. But at that time, all we had here was bedpans. The only treatments were, like I say, was in those days, was it goes back to the time of the Greeks when it was heroic medicine. It was balancing the humors. There was black bile, yellow bile. There was phlegm and blood. And they believed that if you had an illness, you had to get this either through purging, puking, blistering, such thing as cupping. The only way you could, and they use leeches to get these bad humors out or to balance these humors to get the patient well. There was also a combination of herbal and homeopathic medicine. There was a lot of patent medicines that contained mostly alcohol. And basically, the care wasn't the greatest. They just tried to make you as comfortable as possible at that time.
Now, here in the building, we have separate areas. What are the separate areas, and what do you have in them?
When you come into the room here, in the initial room, there's a bed with a patient in it that's had a mining accident. We've got a nurse here sitting at the edge of the bed. The nurse is actually from World War I. And we've got some beautiful cabinets that we got from San Francisco. These cabinets were built in 1820. They were jewelry cabinets that came out of St. Louis. There were two of them. And they're enormous cabinets with plate glass doors that slide up that weigh 100 pounds each. And these cabinets were brought out of South San Francisco. They were in storage. They were shipped out from St. Louis. They were an apothecary store, a shop in San Francisco that's converted to a drugstore and then finally put into storage. And they weren't so much in bad shape as they just needed to be cleaned up and hauled up here. This was a donation from a gentleman that's now in Minnesota. Also, when you inside these cases, there's a lot of patent medicine, a lot of apothecary jars. There's some early medical instruments, artifacts we had. From some of this goes up into the 20th century. We have stuff from the early 1920s here. An old doctor's bag.
A couple of doctor's bags.
We have an old ether mask. You got to realize back in the 1850s, although they knew about nitrous oxide that was used by the dental profession in 1844, a lot of physicians didn't use anything except maybe alcohol as an anesthetic up until about 1860 when it was accepted more by ether goes back, of course, to the time of the Greeks. If you go on in, we have a skeleton in the closet that came from UC Davis
Medical
School.
Oh, don't we all? Yeah.
And when you go a little further in, we have a treadle dental drill that goes back to about 1910, and along with a dental cabinet before there was. This is a wood dental cabinet, and back in those days they used what they called a turnkey to remove teeth. They just reached in, they grabbed it and twisted the tooth out, and then.
Oh, nice.
So you go into the next room, and then we have a lot of quackery devices. We have probably one of the foremost quackery devices. There's only three of these in the United States. One in the Quackery Museum in Minnesota, the other one at the museum in Sacramento on Elba Street. And this is called a radionics machine by Albert Abrams, and it was used to cure diseases by mail order. People would mail in samples of their blood. They would put it on this device. And they believed that diseases gave off different frequencies of radiation. As the patient would mail in a sum of money, a sample of blood on a cotton cloth, and the practitioner would send him back a diagnosis and request that he come in and for another amount of money, lay on a table and receive an electric shock.
So wait, that's quackery?
That was quackery.
So you're telling me I've wasted my money here.
And your hair.
And in here. And of course we have the violet ray machines that were sold mail order.
I love those.
My grandmother had one of those. It has different wands in it.
Yeah. It generates static electricity
static electricity.
You put your fingers on it.
It was a coil that produced about 3,000 volts. But just enough to give you a little shock, and people, it was a placebo effect, and people believed it would cure gout, arthritis.
They are fun.
And it would promote hair growth. We had one wand that stuck in, and was a rake, and ran it through your hair. And what else do we have? We have a 1921 dental x-ray machine dental, and it has no enclosure, no protection at all. You've got a lot of Rinkins. From this machine. It was very dangerous.
I was noticing the fee structure that it back then it only cost $5 for desanguination or bleeding. Now, Mark, what do you, Dr. Vaughn, what do you charge for a bleeding?
For a desanguination.
I mean, yeah, just just to compare prices from, you know, so back in the 1850s, bleeding would have cost $5. I should probably ask Dr. Seck what he charged for bleeding back in, you know, in the 60s or whatever. But what do you charge now for bleeding?
I'm usually repairing bleeding rather than causing it. We do use it, though. We do use therapeutic phlebotomy for certain diseases that require it when people have too high of a red blood cell count. But since we don't do phlebotomy in our office, we send it to the infusion center.
You use leeches.
But, yeah, okay.
And leeches are still used today.
Right. Yeah, the courthouse is right next door.
Yeah. George Washington, our first president, died from overbleeding.
I did not know
really?
That.
Oh, really? Was it because of a therapeutic procedure?
Yes.
Or, well, I guess it wasn't therapeutic, was it?
Not very.
No. Was that...
That's pretty much all I can add.
That's okay.
Well, right. other than the fact that the museum is free, it's open to the public, and it'll be open today from, what, noon to 3 o'clock? So it's right here at 219 Maple Street in historic Auburn. I recommend you come on down. You've got plenty
okay.
of time.
And we'll talk about medicine more, especially going back to the 60s and earlier with our four guest physicians after this break. Or this break. There you go.
Since 1966, Sutter Auburn Faith Hospital has been providing award-winning care to members of the community, to people just like you. The tradition of excellence continues today with our comprehensive family birth center, cancer services, 24-hour emergency care, and a whole range of outpatient services with convenient hours and locations to serve you.
In addition, we've been recognized for excellence in managing heart attacks, heart failure, pneumonia, and surgical care. We are one of a select few hospitals in the state to earn recognition from VHA's West Coast region for sustained outstanding clinical performance.
To learn more about Sutter Auburn Faith Hospital, visit us on the web at sutterauburnfaith.org/medicallyspeakingradio. That's sutterauburnfaith.org/medicallyspeakingradio.
Sutter Health, with you for life.
This is Dr. Mark Vaughn. I want to tell you about my dentist, Rodney Kihara. His office is located right in town at High Street and Auburn Folsom Road. His staff is pleasant. They smile when you walk in, and you know who they are because they're there every time. We're talking about Flo, Cheryl, and Judy. Their pleasant faces welcome you into the office and let you know that you're in the right spot, a comfortable place to go to the dentist. Call Dr. Kihara's office at 888-1966. That's 888-1966.
The doctor would say, don't stick anything in your ear. Unless, of course, it's medically speaking. On K-High, the voice of the foothills. Now, back to Medically Speaking with Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney.
Okay, and we are back at the Gold Country Medical History Museum with Dr. Bob Weiss, who practiced medicine in Auburn. Well, tell us about your practice in Auburn.
Well, I started practice in Auburn probably around the mid-60s.
Okay.
And then I retired about 12 years ago, and I was a surgeon.
Okay.
And at the time I arrived in Auburn, I was the only surgeon in town, and I joined my colleagues, two of them who are here at the Auburn Clinic. Dr. Becker and Dr. Schnitzler, along with Dr. Topic, Dr. Joy, Dr. Gelbach, and Dr. Rizzuto.
Okay. Now, we have you here. Of the other ones, where are they now?
They've all gone to their reward.
Okay. All right. So... But we still have you, and we're glad that we have you here. So you were in the mid-60s, Sutter Auburn Faith Hospital being founded in 66. Is that right?
Approximately.
Okay. Were you involved in that?
I think we were all involved in,
okay.
Founding Auburn Faith Hospital. Prior to that time, we practiced at the Highland Hospital.
At Highland, which is up off of Borland, that area of town, out toward Roby Point.
I have to give a plug to Highland Hospital. I was born in Highland Hospital. I was delivered by Oliver Scheidemann, if any of you remember
Scheidemann.
Him. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, Dr. Scheidemann is the only one from that era that I'm familiar with, because his daughter was in my class in school, and they lived not too far from us. That's because my parents were part of Kaiser, so. But he also, he has died.
Yeah, Dr. Scheidemann was in practice with Dr. Overmiller.
Yes.
Hook. And Hook. And that was the Overmiller Clinic in the 60s. And then the Auburn Clinic had the doctors who I mentioned.
Now, the Auburn Clinic used to be located right there near the high school, right across from where Taco Tree is now?
That's right. That's correct.
And then the Overmiller Clinic, where was that located?
As I recall, it's East Electric on Lincoln Way.
Over on Lincoln Way, yeah, by Alta Vista School.
You're listening to Dr. Bruce Becker.
Dr. Becker, yes. Where the dental clinic is now? Is that? Oh, okay. The Pier Dental Clinic. You also had another hospital in town. That was the county hospital. And we have somebody who was involved in the county hospital. That was Dr. Seck. You were involved in the county hospital. Dr. Seck, when did you first start practicing in Auburn?
I arrived 1960.
Okay.
I planned to go to work at 8 o'clock. At 10 minutes to 8, I delivered my first baby. I walked in too early.
You delivered a baby. What was your specialty?
General practice.
General practice, so you did a lot more than a lot of general practice like myself do today. You were delivering babies.
Doing babies, pinning hips.
Yeah.
Amputations were one of our favorite procedures.
Okay. And you practiced at the county hospital?
The county hospital, which is where Gottschalk's.
That
belongs.
Area. Yeah. Is that the Auburn
Town
Center?
Town Center?
Yeah, okay. What was your position in the hospital?
I started out as a staff physician.
Staff physician.
And 3 years later, the current medical director died.
Oh, wow.
And the other two physicians, one of them resigned and the other one just quit, and I was the only one left.
Oh, my goodness.
So I became the medical director.
How many doctors did you have on staff?
One. That was me.
We
hired several more.
How many bed hospital was that?
146, I think.
Oh, okay. So even larger.
A large part of this was a nursing home.
Oh, okay.
Also.
All right. And they had... an OR there?
Yes.
How many rooms?
We had two rooms in the OR.
Okay. And you mentioned a lot of what you did, a lot of ortho.
A lot of ortho.
And general surgery.
Whatever came along.
Okay. As far as...
If you were in the category that had to accept county hospital care, then we took care of it.
So there was another category.
Yes, it was divided by the financial status of the recipient.
So if you could afford it, would you go somewhere other than the county?
Would I?
Some people will say that.
You could make a decision.
So they would go to Highland?
Highland, yes.
Okay, so we had Highland and county both functioning at the same time. How long were those hospitals in operation?
Well, the county hospital started here in 1855.
So 1855 here, and that same hospital, wherever it was, ended up.
There was a series of hospitals started here on Maple Street, and then there were about three more hospitals before it finally closed.
Oh, locations of the county hospital?
Right.
Okay. And then we had Highland Hospital. Who here knows when Highland Hospital was opened? No? Kent's actually going to go look it up for us.
We got somebody locating.
I make a guess.
Okay. Can you hand the mic to Dr. Schnetzler? This is actually, we haven't introduced Dr. Bob Schnetzler.
I was at the Auburn Clinic from 1958. When I arrived, incidentally, there were no specialists in town. Shortly after that, Dr. Weiss, Dr. Leonard came, and we did have some. Highland Hospital was actually two large houses. One of them was built in the late 1800s, and then it was connected after World War II with a series of rooms and connected these two houses so that it became what it is today in size shortly after World War II, I believe. It continued until 1967, about a year after we opened Auburn Faith. And Auburn Faith was built by owned by 10 doctors. It was a so-called for-profit hospital, and three of them are here. Then shortly after that, Highland Hospital closed. And it was never approved for Medicare and Medicaid patients. So I did general practice. Again, I did everything but internal surgery. Deliver babies, set fractures, and that was the practice of the day. Mm-hmm. And there were six doctors in our group, and we all practiced more or less the same. And I felt when I arrived here that this was extremely nice because I got 2 out of 3 weekends off.
Two out of which two doctors covered each weekend. So it was very nice that way. We actually got some time off where the doctors, single doctors, which was very common in the 50s, most doctors, general practitioners, went and practiced by themselves. They were on call essentially all the time.
Yes, I'm very familiar with that.
Yes.
Although there's a contrast, though, and I'd like to bring that out as far as the contrast between my practice and what it was like that back then. Commonly, you would, if you got called, go in and take care of your patient, and if they even required surgery, you would be the one who does it. A lot of times you said you didn't do internal surgeries, but you did do OB.
Oh, yes. Didn't do C-sections, but several members of our group did. And then when Dr. Weiss came, he took over most of the surgery. I don't think you ever did C-sections, Bob. You did?
I did a few.
I did a few. He would do a hysterectomy. He would do remove a lung. Bob was a general surgeon in the days when general surgeons did most things.
Much different from today.
Yes.
I'm on call continually because I'm solo, like many were back then. But I have the hospitalists at Sutter Auburn Faith who provide in-hospital care for my patients so that I don't have to drop whatever I'm doing. Even if it's a full afternoon of patients and go to the hospital, I can stay there and take care of the outpatient needs.
We had to cover the emergency rooms, and if it was our patient, we had to go. And if we took turns, we had all the doctors in the list, and one day out of every 2 weeks approximately, we would be responsible in the emergency room at Auburn Faith for any patients who came in who weren't ours. And if in the middle of the office, we had to go out to the emergency room, we had to go out to the emergency room. There was nobody else to cover, and we took care of our own patients in the hospital. And so it was much more rapidly changing what you were doing.
Yes. And when was it that Auburn Faith had a staff emergency physician or emergency staff that would be there full-time?
No, well, it was the emergency room staff. He means doctors who are actually do just emergency room work.
Or at least
and
somebody
it was in the 1980s, I would guess. It was okay. When Sutter came. Sutter took over the hospital. I don't think it was before Sutter took it over. After it was a community hospital, I think we continued to serve the emergency room.
Wow.
And then in Sutter took it over, I'll guess about 85.
85. Now, emergency medicine became a specialty in the late 70s, so it took a while for hospitals to change and to actually have emergency physicians in it. The reason I'm interested in that is because my training and my board certification is emergency medicine, trained at Kansas City, and did that for a few years before doing primary care.
Well, as a longtime Auburn resident, lifetime,
I'd kind of be interested in hearing some, shall we call them war stories, or some of your interesting anecdotes of practicing medicine here in the fine town of Auburn. Although the clock on the clubhouse wall says we're coming up against a break, but I should give a call in. Some of you folks out there may want to hear some of these war stories or have some. Our listener line, 885-3565 or 1-800-950-5244.
This is Dr. Mark Vaughn. I wanted to let you know a little bit about our practice at the Auburn Medical Group. The physician, nurses, and front desk personnel all approach the patient, asking themselves the question, how would I want to be treated if I was in the patient's shoes? Listen to what one of our patients has to say about her experience at the Auburn Medical Group.
My name is Susie Brown. I just want to sincerely thank that group of people for being there for me in some emergency situations. They are very efficient, their staff, including their receptionist. Even when you call her, she's got sympathy and compassion for you. And when you're ill, that's what you need. The nurses, the nurse staff is wonderful, and Dr. Vaughn listens to everything you say, and they just get on things. They do not let anything lag.
If you need a doctor, call us at 886-8630 or look at our website at auburnmedicalgroup.com.
Do you find yourself overspending, overeating, or in unhealthy relationships? Is your anger out of control, or do you struggle with drugs and alcohol? Are you tired of just trying harder to deal with your struggles? If you answered yes to any of these questions, there's help available. Celebrate Recovery is an international ministry that meets locally at Parkside Church, 3885 Richardson Drive, Auburn. Meetings are held every Friday night from 6 to 9:15 p.m. All areas of recovery are welcome. Celebrate Recovery is a Christ-centered, 12-step recovery program that offers real and lasting change. Contact Sheila Dobbin at 823-9911. That's 823-9911. For a listing of Celebrate Recovery locations, go to CelebrateRecovery.com. We invite you to join us at Parkside as we celebrate recovery.
Now, back to Medically Speaking with Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney.
We're back from the break at the Auburn Medical History the Gold Country Medical History Museum at 219 Maple Street. And we're talking with some local Auburn doctors who've practiced in the area for decades. We've got with us right now Dr. Bruce Becker, who is going to bring us some anecdotes. I had asked before the break if any of these guys had some good war stories for all these years in Auburn. So I think Dr. Becker raised his hand.
Well, I'll fill in a little bit. I showed up in 1957 doing general practice at the Auburn Clinic. And at that time, I think there were 13 doctors in private practice, plus doctors at the county and at DeWitt. It was a very cozy group. Everybody knew everybody. Right now, I couldn't even tell you how many doctors are in Auburn.
I think it's about 10 times that.
Yeah. And everyone worked together. If you were up at the hospital and somebody else's patient was having trouble, no problem. You'd step in and start the IV or do whatever needed doing.
Hmm.
One Saturday morning, there was a bus accident up on Highway. It would have been Highway 40 at that time. They brought something like 30 patients into Highland, which was
were
lined up on gurneys outside, up the hallway. Just about every doctor in town showed up without being told. They heard there was a problem, and they were all there pitching in and taking care. It was just a completely different atmosphere than we tend to see now, I think.
Huh. Wow. And what year was that?
That would have been late 50s. Because I arrived in 57, and this was probably 58 or 59.
Okay. All right. And there was another one. Dr. Schnetzler was speaking during the break about marching up through the – did you actually go through snow to get up to the
– No, but I'll tell you a good war story, one of my favorites. At Old Highland Hospital, I got a call, emergency room, this busload of – girls from I believe Marin County had gone up skiing, and one of them injured their ankle. And there were no doctors up at closer. They stopped and came to Highland Hospital to have her checked. She was in a lot of pain, crying. And I went up there. The whole hall was full of these other passengers, and she was in the emergency room. And I went in, and I took off her splint to see what had happened to her ankle. As soon as I got off her splint, she was fine. All the pain was gone. She walked out with me. And for the other girls, all their eyes got big that I was a miracle worker. I'd taken off the splint that was too tight. So that's my little war story. Happy one.
That's good.
Oh, certainly we have more.
Yes.
Anyone?
Yeah. Something else that be interesting to know about is we talked a little bit about the change as far as how you take care of the patients from beginning to end as far as all over the hospital. But I was also interested in therapy changes that occurred. Were there things that we don't see anymore that you did normally? It was normal practice back then and have changed significantly. I think of with Kent was speaking earlier about the phlebotomy, the draining of the blood, and things that went on way back in the 1800s. But even just since you guys were in the practice in the 60s, 70s, there's been changes. I guess one thing I could ask is how many of you have ordered an MRI?
What's that?
Well, you know, one thing I can think of just as a patient, when I was a kid, everybody and his brother got his tonsil taken out. It was like, you know, right. And even now when I go to a dentist, mine are not out. So dentists will look in my mouth and say, wow, four wisdom teeth and a pair of tonsils. And they'll call other people in to look because they just don't see baby boomers with that apparatus.
Dr. Weiss?
Dr. Weiss, you were going to?
Well, I've noticed changes in surgical practice.
Yeah.
One of the common treatments at that time for breast cancer was to do a radical mastectomy, which included removing of the main muscles of the chest wall, dissecting all the lymph nodes in the axilla, and if you got out 30 lymph nodes, you did a good job.
Oh, man.
A certain percentage of those patients developed some swelling of their arm postoperatively, and the practice today is much more conservative. Some cancers can be treated adequately with just removal of the lump, and some require removal of the lump and dissection of the lymph nodes in the lower axilla, so I think surgery in general today has become more conservative, more specific, and of course with the use of the endoscope for abdominal surgery, much easier on the patient.
Certainly less invasive with the laparoscopy and things like that.
That's correct.
I think Highland Hospital offered some very quaint anecdotes. Yeah.
This is Dr. Becker we're listening to.
The surgery was in what was the old dining room of the Lubeck Mansion.
Wow.
And, you know, if it was a hot day, you open the windows, and the hallway, walking past the surgery, was a corridor going to the little room that we use for emergencies. So we couldn't have people peering in at the operating room, so there was a portable screen. But people, heads would peer over the top of the screen to see who was doing what.
Kind of like kids watching a construction site or something.
My goodness.
When I first got there, this soon changed, but the recovery for surgical patients was upstairs. And the only way that you could get these poor post-op patients up there was to carry them up this narrow flight of stairs. The OB wing was at the other end of the building, and if you had an OB patient who had to go up for an X-ray or something, they had to be rolled outside on the gurney and down the driveway and then up the ramp into the x-ray room.
Outdoors?
Yeah. Outdoors. If it was raining, somebody held an umbrella over them.
What in the event of a particularly obese patient, how did they get them upstairs?
They must have recovered them in the corridor downstairs.
My goodness.
But anyway, we were very glad to see Auburn Faith come along.
It sounds like it. That's what's going on. One question I had was, who was the, if I was paying attention better earlier, I would probably know, who was the first of this group to practice in Auburn?
I was. I came in 57.
57. So we
Max
go back to 57.
Dunovitz was a senior doc at the Auburn Clinic, and he was looking forward to retiring, so we needed another body in there.
That's the Max Dunovitz. You see the sign there on Mount Vernon Road?
Yeah,
okay.
That's right.
So Mrs. Dunovitz at Evie Kane, was she there when you were there?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, that's Peggy?
Peggy Dunovitz.
Is that her name?
Yes.
That was his daughter-in-law. Yeah.
His daughter-in-law. She was there when you were at EVK?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, she was still there when I was when I went to EVK. Okay.
Max was very persuasive. When I was a med student down at Cal, I came up here as an extern in the summer of 1952, and I spent a month with the clinic just to see what private practice was like. I went back, finished my training, and then did some time in the Navy, and then I started a surgical residency, and I was driving through Auburn in early 57 on my way to Reno, and I thought I'd stop by and say hi to the guys. Well, Max was very desperate to get someone to take his place, and he twisted my arm enough that I dropped out of my surgical residency and came up and took the job at the clinic.
Oh, my goodness.
Been here ever since.
Oh, wow. So that was 57. 1957. Now, was there ever a hospital somewhere off of Aeolia?
That was a private hospital on.
It was gone though when we came.
It was gone when we got here. Yeah.
But earlier there had been a hospital on Aeolia.
Okay.
And earlier, I don't know how much earlier. And the other hospital that was converting to a general hospital was Weimar. Weimar had been developed for strictly
TB.
A tuberculosis hospital, isolation of tuberculosis. But after World War II, when they got specific treatments for tuberculosis, they rapidly emptied out the hospital of active tuberculosis, cured it, treated it, and by the time I came, they were becoming a general hospital. Shortly after that, we went tried to get Hill Burton money, government money, to build a new hospital to replace Highland. And one of the reasons we were refused government money was that we had enough hospitals, and they counted Weimar in the county hospital in Highland. We had enough beds. And so we were refused, and then we went to, as they say, a for-profit hospital with 10 doctors, putting up their money and signing the mortgage and so forth for Auburn Faith.
So Weimar actually was a hospital at that time?
Weimar was a general hospital, and they had been a tuberculosis hospital since, I think, the 1920s, sometime when California required that each county have a tuberculosis hospital, and Weimar was actually a group of, I think, five counties, including Sacramento. And, of course, the mountain air was thought to be curative for tuberculosis, but by the time I arrived in 58, they essentially had run out of tuberculosis patients.
When did it close as a hospital?
In the 1960s, I would guess. And for a short time after it closed, it became a place where Vietnamese refugees, after the end of the Vietnamese War, came to and lived in there. And I went up several times and ran a free clinic for them. And so Weimar's had a diverse history.
Oh, it looks like we have to stop. We want to remind everybody we'll be on again next week at 10 o'clock.
Yep, next week at 10 o'clock on AM 950. Hi, your voice of the Foothills. I want to thank our guests, Drs. Gordon Seck, Bruce Becker, Robert Schnetzler, and Robert Weiss, as well as the consulting curator of the Gold Country Medical History Museum, Kent Perryman. Come on down and visit him today at noon. It's open, 219 Maple Street.
And as always, this is Dr. Vaughn saying, stay in good health. We'll be right back.
Foothill happenings for the world, at KHI.com. We are the voice of the Foothills. KAHI, Auburn, Grass Valley, Placerville.